Okay. I know it's already been said once, but I'll say it again. Thanks for coming here and being involved in this process. It just indicates, further illustrates that you are obviously committed to finding the right opportunity, that you would take a day, you know, out of your week and invest 8 hours of your time to come and listen to this stuff. We all do this sooner or later. You know, if you are in a job right now, I know hands were raised earlier, and a number of you already have a job and you're okay, so you're not worried about paying the bills. But it will happen sooner or later. It's inevitable. Ken mentioned earlier that the days of being in one job for 30 years and retiring are long gone. It's probably still there a little bit, but you know, some companies, if the company's large enough, there's opportunity for development and movement. But you will make a number of transitions. There's no question about it. So what you learn today is not just a one-time hit. It will help you as you transition to other opportunities in your future. The topic we're going to cover right now is all about marketing yourself. And Kim and I are going to tag team on this stuff. We are filling in for our cohort, Mr. Bob Yanega. Bob normally covers this whole marketing networking aspect, and it's only fitting for me to mention that we're missing him this morning. Bob has a great way of presenting how to get in front of people through the networking process. And I want to encourage you, in the front of your outline, there are 6 or 7 consecutive Thursdays we'll be holding here at Parkside. About 2-hour sessions from like 7 to 9, 7 to 8:30, in one of the meeting rooms up here, and no doubt Bob will be presenting. Probably, I didn't want to commit to him in the outline, but I'm pretty sure he's going to want to do the networking segment. So I would really encourage you to be there for that one, and all the others for that matter. Everything we're talking about today, we are giving you sort of the 30,000-foot perspective. You know, we can hit this stuff and give you what you need, essentially, but the details below the surface are pretty important, and it will give us a chance in those individual sessions to work with you personally and tailor this stuff to your particular needs. So, I guess I should introduce myself here. My name is Marty Guastella, and relative to my background, I think Ked said he's been here 30 years. I think I was thinking the same thing. I've been with Parkside 31 years in May. So there is a place where you can stay for 31 years. Back when it was a small little church over in Fairmont Boulevard, but the Lord has truly blessed this church. And if you don't have a church home, I want to encourage you to come on back. Come on back tomorrow morning. We have services at 8:30 and 9:45 and 11:15, and an evening service, and I'm not sure who's preaching. Anybody know who's preaching tomorrow? Probably Alistair. He's back from sabbatical. I've been in the human resource recruiting job search process for most of my career. Ken alluded to being in a band. I actually have a band right now called Ricky and the Rockets, and we play kind of an avocation. It's my way to get away from the human resource field for a while. And we play around town here and there at like Legacy Village and car shows. And we stay out of the musty bars where people are going crazy. But we have fun. That's where I started my career, way back when. But over the course of the last 30-plus years, I've been in the HR field. I spent about 10 years in professional and retained recruiting, both on a contingent and a retained basis. I have recruited for Fortune 100 companies down to mom-and-pop organizations, from presidents down to trainees, and just about, gosh, so many different industries. I don't want to bore you with all that. Did that for about 10 years. Then I went into career counseling. It kind of dovetailed into it because a lot of the companies I was retained by to assist in finding people wanted certain people out. So we had to help them in how to conduct a job search. So I've done outplacement for a whole bunch of years, probably conservatively transition maybe, I don't know, maybe 5,000-7,000 people over that time. A lot of people. Companies would mass lay off 300 at a time, and we'd have to do this kind of workshop for plants, and done that for a while. And my current role for the last 11 and a half years, I am vice president of human resources for a medical imaging company in Hudson, Ohio. The company's called King's Medical Group. We operate medical diagnostic imaging facilities. I think somebody in here is an ultrasound, if I remember right. But we do that in 14 different states. We operate our own imaging centers. We partner with hospitals in running their MRI departments. And I have the privilege of being the person responsible to try and help our company's people be effective and be successful. So I've had an opportunity, fortunately, through my career, to be on both sides of that desk, to have a chance to be the one trying to sell a candidate, if you will, place somebody in a company, and now being the person on the other side of the desk deciding whether I want to have that person in my company. And it's given me, God's really blessed me with an opportunity to see both sides of that situation, which I hope will help you today as we go through this process. So to get to this getting the interview thing, this process that we're all going through right now, it's really, I know this is going to sound trite, okay, but it's not really rocket science. This is not that hard. We make it harder on ourselves because of all the things we really don't understand about it, because we don't do it all the time. You know, I mean, we all know how to tie our shoes, right? It's easy. You can do it with your eyes closed because you do it every day. But the first time you tied your shoes, it was very difficult. In fact, it was challenging for the first couple of months until you got the hang of it. So I would suggest to you that if you were a professional job seeker, okay, if you learned how to do this and you were doing it every year, you'd be pretty good at it after a while. If you would find a job, somebody would hire you. But you don't do this every day. So our hope is to take what we've gained in the experience in working with others and going through this process and helping you be more efficient when you do have to go through the job search process. There are basically three things that happen, right? You first have to kind of know what you want, who you are, and what's going on. So you got to kind of take an inventory, take a look at yourself. Ken alluded to a lot of that. You got to understand what you're selling. The second step then is putting the product in the market. But you have to know where to look, right? You got to know where the market will buy your product. So you have to get your product on the shelf. That's the whole marketing thing we're going to get into. But just because you got your product on the shelf doesn't mean they're going to buy it. So the third part of this is presenting your product effectively to the purchaser, the hiring authority. The interview process is the most critical part. Okay, and I mean that clearly. It's important that you get your act together. It's important you put a marketing plan together. But when you get in front of the right hiring authority, if you drop the ball, you're done. So it doesn't matter how good your resume is, truly. You sell it in the interview. You got to have something reasonably good in a resume. But if there's even a hint that the person is worth looking at, I'll talk to them. I want to see if they can tell me how good they are. I want to see if they fit my needs. So these three buckets are what we're trying to talk about today. Dan Larrison mentioned this morning, you know, the three major starting points. So by means of an introduction as to what we're going to cover for the rest of the day, that's how it works. There's an outline segment there that we're going to get to, but before I get to that, I want to cover something I guess I better have one of these that works. I want to talk about degrees of marketability. You're about to market yourself. You're about to put yourself into the job market, and you're going to target different means to get in front of hiring authorities. Okay? You're going to put your product on the shelf. But depending upon what the person wants to buy, you are, as a product, have degrees of marketability associated with your value. If you think of a target, okay, the job that you have, who's the person with ultrasound? That rings a bell in my ear. Young lady. Okay, ultrasound. That is a very specific and unique skill set. What was your first name?
Karen.
Karen?
Aaron.
Aaron. Aaron had to go to a special training program to get that certification. Are you U.S. ultrasound certified as well? That's not easy to get, okay? It's a lot of work. It's a couple of years. You've got to know what you're doing to get there. It's a very defined role. So to find a job as an ultrasound technologist is right here on the target, okay? That's the job. So if she's looking for that job in a retail company, not going to happen. But there are companies that sell ultrasound products. And if Erin has an engaging, outgoing personality, they might see her as a customer service rep or a salesperson for that product area. So you don't necessarily have to be an ultrasound tech doing ultrasounds. But see, this is the ultrasound tech doing ultrasounds. This is the ultrasound tech selling the product. This is changing careers altogether. The employer looks at the target, and they look at you, and they see how close you are to the bullseye. That's what it's all about, okay? Trying to get the closest fit. And we'll talk more about that this afternoon. Just understand for the purposes of discussion now that your background has degrees of marketability. You will, the closer you are to the bullseye for what you do, the faster you'll get success. The faster you'll find an opportunity. The better your resume is aligned with your bullseye, the faster people want to talk to you. You'll get more opportunity. But it's very narrow, right? You want to do this. The more you broaden it out, the more you go to the outsides of the target, the longer it takes. The more you have to talk generically when you speak to the interviewer. The more you have to get to more places, because there's other people that have exactly what the bullseye offers, and so you're competing against them. You've got to put a spin or a presentation difference in your interview process. So there are degrees of marketability associated with your job search campaign. Once you understand what your product is, what you have to offer, and you determine where on the target you want to go, that's when you set your job search goals. Ken mentioned this, but there are basically three goal levels. The immediate objective is whatever that target is that you're trying to hit, wherever you're trying to hit the target. The immediate objective, that's what you want right now. And you better know what you want right now. And if you don't really know what you want to do, you need to come to that first workshop where Ken talks about understanding your talents and trying to define your next step. Okay? The second goal, your 3 to 5 year intermediate goal, would be, if you find the first goal, the immediate one, where will that lead you down the road? Your resume, as I said earlier, is your tombstone. It's where you've been. It's not where you're going, okay? And you're assuming a person reading your resume is going to say, she's been a successful ultrasound tech, therefore she'll be a successful ultrasound tech with me. Not necessarily. Environments and cultures and things change. Equipment, technology changes. Okay? So set up yourself to find the right opportunity, but think in terms of that's not the end all, right? It's where you're going to get in so that 3 to 5 years down the road, you're going to have this kind of opportunity for growth or progression. You need to know what that goal is. They're going to want to know what that goal is. They're going to ask you, where do you see yourself down the road? If we hire you in this capacity, what are you looking for your future? If you can't answer that, they're not going to be able to, right? You've got to answer that. And then you want a 5-year-plus goal, something out there. And that can be kind of general, because who knows where they're going to be tomorrow, let alone 5 years from now, for sure, right? But they got to see that you have some kind of planning in mind, that you have a target, you have a plan in place. It could be something as simple as, you know, a position of greater authority and responsibility. I aspire to be in management at some point, but I'm sure that as I'm prepared for that, your organization will recognize that. Generic is safe enough when you get that far out, but you absolutely have to know what you want now because it helps you target more effectively and discuss it more effectively in the interview, and you have to know where that job's going to lead you in the next 3 to 5 years. And chances are you'll be with that company maybe 3 to 5 years, and maybe you'll move on from there. Depending upon what career field you're in, or you know what your stage of life you're in, maybe you're looking for your last job. Some of you are looking for your first job. Everybody's different. Okay, so that's enough for that. In your outline, you see seeking job opportunities, marketing your product effectively. Okay? If Bob Yanega was here, he would tell you that that first paragraph is pretty much what it's all about. You may have heard it's often who you know rather than what you know that opens the door. That is absolutely true. Knowing people and networking with people is the most effective way to find an opportunity. People know you, there's degrees of comfort involved. When there's degrees of comfort involved, they feel more confident, you're less risky, you're more likely to get in a door. Okay? But it doesn't mean those of you who may not necessarily be the most wonderful, outgoing, social people, that you have to have this huge network and chat it all up and become this wonderful salesperson to get a new job. You don't have to do that. You just have to tell people that know you what's going on. So Bob emphasizes his approach to basically selling or networking himself. What he does is very effective, but it might not necessarily work for everybody in the room because he's very good at how he sells himself, okay? Some of you will be very good at that. Some of you won't do so well with that. So you can't rely on a method. This segment talks about multiple methods to get into the job market, multiple channels, multiple ways to get your product to market, okay? Basically what you're trying to do is advertise your product. So for a general illustration, if you think about, Campbell's soup, okay? How many different ways do you think they market Campbell's soup? Anybody? Throw one out.
100.
What'd you say?
100.
100 different ways. Okay. So give me one way. How would you market it?
TV.
What else?
Radio.
Taste testing.
Print
media.
Billboard.
Even little old ladies at the corner in the grocery store making you taste it. There's 100 different ways to get the product to market. So why is it any different with you? You're a product. You are. What you do is a service. It's a product. In fact, you're an asset. Don't forget that. Okay? You're not overhead. Some of you may feel like overhead because you got caught up in a downsizing. That's unfortunately narrow-sighted for the company you work for. You are an asset, and nobody can do the job like you can do it because you bring a unique set of character and qualities to that role. Okay, you have to think of yourself as an asset. Think of yourself as a product that can get into multiple channels. Okay, the first segment there, the first channel, and these necessarily are not in any order of impact. Okay, they all work to varying degrees. They're on the page here because Kim and I are going to tag team here a little differently this time to do what we got to do here. But the very first one that's shown there is called warm networking, utilizing personal contacts, and in quotes, the Girard 250 law. Anybody ever heard of that, Girard 250 law? Nobody's ever heard of the Girard 250 law.
I did after I Googled it once I saw it on this paper.
Okay. She's prepared. She had the outline before you did. Okay. Joe Girard is known in the Guinness Book of World Records as the best, most effective car salesman, I think it was Chevy's or something, that's ever lived kind of thing. He just sold a lot of cars. And he wasn't always that way. The story goes that Joe was a miserable car salesman when he first got into the business. He just couldn't sell cars at all. And basically, he would sit in the dealership waiting for people to walk in. Now, how many of you have gotten involved in buying a car lately or leasing a car lately? Anybody? Probably not the best thing to be doing when you're unemployed is trying to get a new car. I just ended up having to do that myself. My wife's car lease came up, and I had to go out and go through this process. And there's two things I dislike in life. That's one of them, and the other is getting a root canal. And So the Joe Girard guy sitting in the car dealership is the last guy I want to talk to, okay? I'd rather talk to my dentist, Dave Cameron, than talk to him or her. But it's one of those necessary evils, right? Joe Girard was working in the car dealership trying to make a living, but he was starving to death. And, you know, somebody basically told him, Joe, you got to think of another line of work. You're not a real good salesman. So the problem was that Joe was sitting in the dealership waiting for people to come in the door. And, of course, you've had that experience. You get pounced on, and the first thing you want to know is how much you want to spend per month. You know, it's ridiculous, but don't get me started with that because I'm right up to here with car dealers right now. So the thing is that Joe was kind of failing and he didn't know how he was going to be successful, how he was going to make money. As it turns out, he had the occasion to go to a friend's wedding. And he, you know, arrived at the wedding and went through the whole process and was at the reception. And he looked around the room and he saw, you know, hundreds of people for this wedding. And he started thinking to himself, how do these people know all these people? So he basically went up to the person that set up all the chairs for the wedding, you know, the reception. And he said, you know, when you normally do an average wedding, how many people usually attend? And the person, I don't know, 200, 250, something like that. That's the average. It's bigger, smaller, but that's the norm. So he thought about that. A few days later, the story goes on that he apparently had the occasion to go to a wake. And he's standing in line with everybody else, and he's, you know, paying his respects, and he goes over to the funeral director, and he says, gosh, this is a huge line. Well, how many people normally come through to pay their respects for one of these things? The guy said, well, you know, it varies, but 200 to 250. So Joe said, this can't be a coincidence. I must know 250 people. But I can't begin to think of that. Now, if I said right now we're going to stop, for the next 20 minutes you're going to write down the names of 250 people you know, how many of you could do that? Okay? So how come you're not already doing it? Or have you done it? Have you written down everybody you know and told them you're looking for a job? Who's done that? Raise your hand. Look around, folks. Nobody's raising their hand. So why haven't you done that? Why haven't you done that? Why haven't you written down a list and told them?
Okay, because I don't want to be the elephant in the room again. I don't feel like having a conversation. You know, it's one of those.
That's the problem. It'll take you longer then.
And it may.
You will.
It may.
Count on it.
But because after understanding that presentation can be like, oh wow. You know, you don't always want to, when someone sees you, oh, she's looking for a job. You know, or she may come across like, you know, I'm already going through. I'm still trying to digest it myself. So
there's a fine line.
That
there's a fine line between being the person who's annoying and trying to use that resource as a connection to a point where they really want to help you. See, that's the problem with all this, because the people you know, they want to help you. They truly do. In fact, some people take great joy out of being able to put you in touch with the right people. But if you don't at least let them know you're in the market, it doesn't have to be a, you know, half an hour conversation. It could be over a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Hey, you know, I just want to let you know, can we meet for coffee for 10 minutes? Yeah, listen, here's what's going on. I'm looking for a new opportunity. You know a lot of people. I just thought I'd tell you my story. That's all. Give me 5 minutes. I'll buy you a cup of coffee. That's it. That's all it is. It's not a whole lot of, you know, rocket science. But that's what Joe Girard did. He made a list of everybody he knew, his aunts, his uncles, his friends, his old friends, his college roommates, everybody. And he basically got on the phone and just said, hey, how you doing? I haven't talked to you for a while. Listen, I'm selling Chevys. No, I'm not trying to sell you a car. But if you know anybody who wants to buy a car, send them to me. I'll give them a great deal. I'm just getting started. Hey, I could use your help. Now, who's more likely to send somebody to you? Somebody who knows you or somebody who doesn't know you? So if you were to tell your friends, listen, I've been working in ultrasound and I really would like a new opportunity. And if you hear about anything, let me know. I mean, this is what I do. You hear about anything going on in the clinic organization or UH or whatever, just keep me in mind. That's all. That's it. That's all you're doing. You're not going through a whole 15-page diration or, you know, here's all the stuff I've ever done and here's my resume and you got to give it to this person and make sure you give it to that. No, that's using your friends. There's a difference. I'm just talking about awareness.
It's not whiny.
It's not whiny. Yeah. It's not, you know, they've got to help you. You're just saying, hey, now let me ask you a question. If your friend came to you and asked you for help, what would you do? Would you turn your back on them? If your relative came to you and said, hey, I just want you to know I'm out of work. If you hear of anything, let me know, huh? Wouldn't you keep your ears open? So just reverse the channel for a minute. They'll help you. Unless you make it this big whiny, you know, problem that they feel that every time they see you, you got to talk about the job search. But you have to get going with warm networking. As a result of this warm networking, the reason I call it warm is because those contacts know you, right? They're warm to you. They'll be receptive to whatever you have to say. Okay? So, use the Girard 250 approach, and you'll be really amazed, really, honestly. I'd put everybody on the list, my dentist, my doctor, everybody. Yes, sir?
Just real quick to add to that.
That's exactly right. What was your first name?
Jerry.
That's exactly right. Jerry is a good segue to what I wanted to talk about. It's a perfect entree. You remember, each of you have a 250 list, right? So that means the person you just talked to, they know 250 people. You're just one person of the 250 people they know. So what he just illustrated was exactly that process, that every one of us have that list. So, and some of us have bigger lists. I mean, huge lists, right? Anybody that's been in any kind of a role where you got to talk with people all the time, I mean, you know, and don't get me wrong as I say this from out of being immodest in any way, but I know a ton of people. I mean, it's because I have to in what I do. I talk to people all day long. So it's chances are pretty good that, you know, I probably know somebody in common. I probably help somebody here. In fact, I want to offer that to you as well. I brought a lot of business cards, so you're welcome to take one, you know, at the end of the day here. And if you have questions as you go through this process, or maybe you're saying, you know, I want to approach that company, give me a call. Maybe I know somebody there and I can help you. Kim's going to show us how to do that technically with online resources. But anyway, Girard 250 networking is a very, very good principle. It's very effective in helping you get in the right door, without question. And it will warm the path before you walk in that door. In fact, what happens is you end up getting the credibility of the referring party, if you think about it. Okay? Which leads me to the next point on the outline. So if that's warm networking, what's cold networking? Take a look at the outline, see if you can come up with a guess. You don't know them at all. The example of cold networking would be something like this. You've targeted a company. You don't know anybody there. They don't know you. You've sent a letter to person X. You've said something like, I want to get into the field of human resources. Somebody in this room wants to be in HR. Was it you? You. Okay, what was your name?
Olivia.
You want to be in HR, okay? Now, before that today, I don't believe I've ever met you. So, bingo. Occasionally, I have met you. Okay, I'm sorry. Yikes. Like I said, I meet a lot of people. So, if Olivia wanted a job in human resources, she might, if she didn't know me, perhaps, she might send me a letter or a resume or something and say, hey, I'd like a job with your company. And I would have to politely tell you, I can't hire anybody right now. I don't have a need. But that doesn't mean I don't know a lot of people. Okay? I know of two positions available right now if you're looking for an HR generalist role. Now, I don't know what that means in terms of your background. But cold networking is, I really don't know her. She's not my relative. She's not my best buddy. Okay, but she targeted me for a purpose to try and get in the door. So she's coming in cold. But when the employer gets on the phone and says, I'm sorry, Olivia, I don't have an opportunity for you. I wish I did. What Olivia's supposed to do is turn that into something. And what she's supposed to do is make it rain. Okay, make it rain. And there's the acronym, R-A-I-N. Okay, make it rain. Look at your outline. Rapport, advice, information, names. What you want to try and do is get into, preferably, a face-to-face 10 to 15-minute meeting with that person. So it would sound something like this. Well, I'm sorry there's nothing available, Mr. Guastella, at your company right now. I really was hoping that there might be an option. I'm impressed by what I've researched on your organization. But I'm wondering, you know, as one human resource person to another, one professional to another, I wonder if I could just take 5 minutes of your time and get a little advice, okay? Because I've been trying to get into this whole field. I think I have a lot to offer, but I think my role is best in as an HR generalist, probably in one of these areas. But could you maybe spend 10 or 15 minutes with me just to help me better understand what's going on in HR right now, what some of the trends are? And You're trying to do this. Now, you do it ideally face-to-face, but you're going to be on the phone initially. So what you're trying to do is build rapport. You're trying to get them to feel your pain a little bit. Okay? Now you're in front of them face-to-face. If they're worth their salt, chances are good they'll help you. Okay? Chances are good they'll take 10 or 15 minutes. Doesn't have to be today. Could be a week from now, because you're still going to be looking, right? So you don't press them. But you want to say, look, I'd be glad to come down at your convenience. You call the day a week from now, 2 weeks from now, 7 o'clock in the morning for coffee. You tell me and I'll be there. Who's going to say no to something like that? It's all in how you approach it. Okay? So now you've built rapport. So your next step is to get advice. And essentially, you're going through that thing that Ken mentioned, what you call it, Ken? This is the place I want to look. These are the kind of companies marketing plan. You're basically giving them your marketing plan. Here's what I'm looking for. Here's the kind of stuff I'm capable of doing. Here's my aspirations for my immediate goal. Here's what I'm looking for 3 to 5 years down the road. And I'm hoping that I can, you know, get in front of people that may be hiring. Do you have any advice for me, and how would I be more effective in getting in front of other people for this opportunity? Where else would you, if you were in my shoes, Mr. Jones, what would you do? Make them feel what you're going through, okay? Now, that's advice. You get them this, so they start telling you, we'll do this and do that, and now you're saying, you know, can you just give me 5-minute critique of my resume? Here's my resume. Just look at it real quick. Tell me what you think. Does it catch your eye at all? Well, think about what you're doing, right? I mean, you're putting your resume right under his nose. You're working it, okay? Why? Because it's a cold contact and you want it to warm up. Because Mr. Jones is not going to send you to his best friend if he doesn't think you're worth it. So you got to sell it a little bit here, right? So Mr. Jones then starts to give you advice. Well, I would do this and I would fix this. Now, when they do that, when they start to give advice, how does that make them feel? Good about themselves, right? Valuable. Mm-hmm. And it should be, because it's helpful information to you. But it helps them feel better because they're helping you. Now they want to help you, because they're already starting to help you. So rapport, advice. Now that's started to disclose, all that information is happening. Information is where you kind of start to sink the hook. A little bait, okay? You're jiggling the bait. Can you give me more information about what's really going on in the field of HR? I'm sure you must attend trade shows, conferences. What are some of the trends? Is there growth in this field? Do you see? I know you don't have any position available, but is your organization budgeted for growth in your department? You need to get information, general information on the company, on that person, on the industry they're in, just to kind of get a feel for what's going on. And again, that sets them up as a credible source. They're giving you information. They feel good about what they're telling you. And now, when you get to the end of that 10 or 15 minutes, you set the hook. I wonder if you could give me 2 or 3 names of others you may know who might be able to give me further advice, other people I could network with. I mean, don't, it's not a dirty word, okay, especially today. They know what you're doing. You're there to network. So, but you're not going to just get those names in a 2-second phone call. They have to believe that you're worth tapping into their network. It's like when somebody sends you a friend on your Facebook. Do you friend everybody that sends a friend on friend request? Of course not. Okay? I must get a 6 friend requests every day, no exaggeration, on LinkedIn. I don't even know who these people are, but somehow we're 3 or 4 degrees, and I'm not going to give you my information and contact because I'm never going to hear the end of it. So you're only going to do that if you're credible. They're only going to give you names. So you just spent 10 or 15 minutes building to that point of getting the name. So you've got to make it rain. Remember the acronym. It's easy to do. Rapport, advice, information, names. Okay? Now, once he gives you a name, what happened when you get to that next person? Is it a cold or warm network? It's warm. Because you just, you're going in on the credibility of the guy that referred you. So it's warm. Becomes a warm network. Okay? Okay. Kim, go for it.
Yeah, boy.
Yes, sir.
And basically, you actually, the individual actually just really just took charge of the interview.
In a referral interview, that's exactly what you're doing. You are controlling the process. They are there as a helpful resource. You are there to provide help to that individual. You're supposed to control it as the interviewee. Yeah, well, think about what I do. You know, my job is all of you. I personally think I've got the best job in any company because I get to take care of the most important asset every company has. I get to make sure, as best as I can, that I create an environment that's effective, competitive, non-discriminatory, all the things that you hear about. That's what I try to do every day. So when somebody comes to me that wants help in their field and they happen to be a peer, somebody in my field, I'm going to do everything I can to help them. Everything I can. Even the people that aren't in my field. You know, it happens. Yeah.
We're about 15 to 20 minutes behind where we need to be right now.
Okay, we got
to
do this real quick. Go ahead. No, not necessarily.
How do you get over that fence?
Well, it's difficult. And
is this the time?
It's not the time to do it. We don't have the time to cover that. We'll cover that in a session, in one of the evening sessions, because it's a session in itself. Phone technique, getting past the gatekeeper, that's a whole, it's not easy. So I need to, you know, I just don't want to screw up your time limit and outline here, okay? But that's a very good question, and we'll cover that.
It is. It's very important. I'm sorry. Our next topic is large-scale networking. I kind of made up this title. So it's not like an official title that you'd read someplace anywhere else, but we're talking about face-to-face meetings in structured situations. This is like my best thing, so I'm happy to talk to you about this. The statistic is 75% of job seekers find their next position through networking. And just as Ken and Marty have already told you, so I found this fresh statistic online from just the last month. So you've gone through your warm contacts and through them to your cold contacts, but how about the other 99% of the people out there? How do you get to those people, or how do you start to get to those people? You know, how do you get more warm contacts? you can't just go to job seekers meeting. You need to mingle with people who already do have jobs. And I think that Ken has already mentioned job fairs, which is an option in certain fields. They're kind of a meat market. It's something that, you know, where you just bring a stack of resumes and you're passing them out. And evidently they're hiring somebody, so some people do have success at that. There's also mass networking events. At least they used to have these. You'll hear my layoff story after lunch, because I was laid off in 2009, and then I did find a position. And in 2009, there were a lot of people laid off. And so they just have like some big place down in the flats, and there'd be 1,000 people down there passing out their little business cards, you know, and networking. Do you know anybody in this field? Do you know anybody in that field? And Bobby Yanego went to a couple of those meetings. I went to one, and it's kind of almost like those polar bear people that jump in the water and swim when it's really cold. Well, if I can do that, I can do anything. I didn't really see a lot of value to it, but some people do, and it's good to get your courage up. It's low risk because, you know, people probably aren't going to remember you. Really, when you think about where such and such people would go to hang out, where can you meet a certain kind of people? Really, one of the best things is your professional associations. Then there are a ton of them in Northeast Ohio. For almost every, some professions have 2, 3, 4 associations. And these groups have monthly meetings. Some of them are breakfast meetings, lunch meetings, dinner meetings. If there's a fee to get in, there's often a lowered fee for people who are in transition. They often have it for like a student admission for those if you are in transition, because they want people to come and find jobs. And I'm having to really restrict myself. I would love to just jump online and show you a whole bunch of stuff. We'll do that in the follow-up sessions. I found this, you can't read it, unfortunately, it's blurry, but it is Cleveland Business Connects magazine, which is available at libraries, various businesses. My employer is actually part of publishing this, and I didn't even introduce myself at the start. Well, after lunch, I'll give my testimony, my layoff testimony, and you'll get to really meet me then. But this, they have an online version of their magazine, and they have, you can't read it, but it says events, and if you click on that, it gives for the current month of their current publication. There's all these, like if you roll over all these things, they're all meetings. There's like several of them for the Human Resource Association. There's one for public relations. There's, you know, just you can go there, you can see what's available for a field that you might be interested in, a meeting that you might go to where you'll meet people who are actually employed and who will know somebody. There, you can also just, I mean, and I think I did this at our first series through this. A guy just, I said, I can find you a meeting, and I just like found him a meeting. You just Google electrical engineering meeting Cleveland, and you'll find something. I mean, you got to look through the list of things that you come up with, but there are a ton of places where you can go. There are also, let's see, what's my next thing? Lectures and meetings of various kinds. This is the Cleveland Technical Societies Council, and which is all of the technical type fields, anything from library science to aeronautical engineering. And they every year have a big scholarship thing where they, you know, they give scholarships to high school, graduating high school students. But they, you know, you can go to this, and all the other, the people there are from the companies that donated to the scholarships. So there are people that, you know, and it does cost a little money. Sometimes you have to spend money to make money, and you would have to see what would work out in your budget. But there are ways that you can figure out where to go to meet the people that you need to meet. I was interested in something a couple of weeks ago. I found out that there are several groups in Northeast Ohio that do this tabletop gaming. Yes, they get together someplace every week. Could be 100 people playing Monopoly and Yahtzee and Scrabble or the table version of Dungeons and Dragons. And, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, if I was an IT programmer, would I not be able to find somebody there that might know somebody that could, you know, and then you're in more of a social situation. You're getting to know people, low risk, but potentially a great benefit to you. So be creative. There's free lectures at libraries. You can either look for meetings or lectures, professional society things that are in your field, or perhaps just something that you find really interesting. I remember last October, I was so frustrated because one of the groups that I actually am a member of, the Usability Professionals Association, where it's involved in website design, they were having a psychologist, a PhD psychologist, talk about the psychology of how web pages are designed and set up. Oh, I really need to know that from my field. But at the same time, a mile down the road at a restaurant, the engineers who designed that huge Lincoln Electric windmill, they were talking about that. Oh man, I would have loved to have gone to that just because it was interesting to me. And I'm not looking for a job in that field, but I bet somebody who would go to that lecture would work at a company that might hire somebody in my field. So you just never know. You either target what is in your field or something that's of interest to you. Let's see, when am I going next? My next thing is volunteer work. And this is not just to get something to, you know, experience to put on your resume if you're entering the job market or changing fields, which is certainly valid. But this is also as networking. I used to usher at Severance Hall. I met a lot of people ushering at Severance Hall for the Cleveland Orchestra. There is a thing coming up. I don't know if anybody here is in the software development field, but there's something called Give Camp, the Greater Cleveland Give Camp. It's coming up in July, and they have this every year where they accept people to donate their time over a weekend, a program. They have like 100 programmers that get together, and they have like a dozen charities that say, oh, we would like our website redone. So you go there, the person would go there, they'd take their laptop, and they'd be assigned, okay, this group of five people, you guys are going to do the one for the botanical garden. And because there's a charity, they need the work done for free. But yet, especially if you were just entering the job market, I mean, there'd be something that you could point to that you actually did. So there are volunteer work not only as getting experience, but also as networking. I feel really strongly that you should do some research up front before the event. You can't do a lot, but you don't want to go into a meeting, say, especially if you're changing fields, and say, well, so what's marketing? You know, or what's the hot, you should have at least a little bit of knowledge beforehand, which you can easily do online, either, you know, in your home computer, or go to the library and look at magazines. You can easily find, you know, just a little something so that you don't go in totally blind. Seek to provide something of value, and really you're thinking from the other person's point of view. And this speaks to what this young lady had said, and I'm sorry I forgot your name, but you want to be able to contribute something, and not just like you're preying on other people or that you're begging. If you have something that a topic of interest, a buzzword, a hot topic, that you can at least ask somebody what did you think about this, then you have a little comfort factor. If you're nervous, if you're not outgoing, start with something that seems less scary to you. And you'll perhaps, and start even with an event that will have less of your target audience present. So say you're wanting to go into HR, go to an engineering society meeting maybe. I mean, just to see how those kind of meetings go, to judge your comfort factor, it would be less of a risk to you. Just to help you get the nerves out of the way so that when you focus in on your own, and this might not even be a good idea, I don't know, it seems like a good idea to me. But the idea is that you can practice. I mean, it's not like you're going to go out and be working on 100 cylinders right from the start. I did not used to be outgoing, believe it or not. I used to be really shy, and my volunteer work changed that. But the most important thing is to make a good impression. If you're not going to make a good impression, you'd do better to stay home. So if you're not feeling up to it, just take your time. Well, you can actually take your time, but you don't want to go and make a bad impression, particularly if you're talking about volunteer work. You don't want to go and say that you'll do something for some group and then drop the ball, because people will never forget. They will never forget. And that's about all I have on the large-scale networking. And we will move over to the e-networking via your professional and social contacts. My first point is something that Ken has already mentioned, which is I would, and this is a tip, this isn't a must, you know, this isn't a rule, but I would create an email account just for job search, so that when the ones come in and out for your job search, they're not going into the same bin as the ones from Aunt Susie, because then they will, you know, you have less of likelihood of missing something or it getting lost or the wrong thing getting forwarded. This way, and Ken had also mentioned, you want to have it be professional. Really, I would go with Gmail, you want maybe Hotmail, something like that. They say depending on the level of a job that you're looking, AOL is probably not a good idea. But I think that's probably, you're talking about director and C-level executives. I think for most positions, AOL doesn't really matter that much. But you do want to have it be your name and some kind of designation so that it'll be unique for you, so that it won't be something silly. LinkedIn would be your primary e-networking source. They say that LinkedIn is the most grown up of the social media network venues currently available. It is also the most private. So this is if you're looking for a job in business, and if it's something that you would be using computers in your work world. I mean, I suppose it would not be as important if you were looking for a shop floor job in a factory. But really, LinkedIn, it has excellent privacy controls. You can set it up to be very controlled. It is your online resume, and that's how you should look at it. And I'm not going to take time to, I would just love to go and look at it right now, but we'll do that in the follow-up session. You did not put your birth date on LinkedIn. You don't put your marital status on LinkedIn. Those kinds of things. And Pastor Dan Larrison has his marital status and his birth year on his LinkedIn profile. I'm thinking, what are you doing here? I think some people put those on because it tells you whether your profile is complete, and what it's really looking for is referrals. Have you put in a recommendation for someone that you know, and has someone else put in a recommendation for you? You don't put your dog's names or that kind of thing. It is your online resume. I found this, and I'm hoping that you can read this. This was a question that was asked, and this is fresh. These are fresh statistics. Asking of employers, which social media do you use for recruiting? And look, you can see LinkedIn, 86.6%. That's almost 87%. So employers are going out on LinkedIn. They're looking for people's resumes online. They can post jobs on LinkedIn for free rather than the paid stuff like what Marty will tell us about. And it's just a tool. You can see the Facebook thing is much lower. Maybe that's more like that they're snooping in someone's to look at their personal life. But LinkedIn is a business tool. Twitter, maybe less so, and then the other ones a lot less. So LinkedIn is really going to be your primary. I found this really, I found this really good quote. An invisible job seeker today is often one viewed by recruiters and potential employers with some suspicion. Because it is rare these days and often is not a good sign. Are you out of touch, behind the times, or using a false name? So if you are in a business field and you don't have any kind of online presence, especially a LinkedIn resume, it really can, at this point in time, count against you. It will make you a less credible candidate. And I'm not going to show LinkedIn. It's hard. Facebook, of course. Most people, I think, use Facebook more for personal than for business. Businesses have their own Facebook sites, but just be very careful. Be very careful about what you put out there, because I have that recent controversy that there was, a couple weeks ago, where they found out that if you were dealing with a recruiter in a company, they were demanding your Facebook password so that they could look at, oh, that's very wrong. I would not do that. And now they're starting to pass laws against that, because they're really not supposed to be able to. That's like asking you for your ATM card so they can check out your bank account. But you don't want to have things out there. If you're in job search, you don't want to have things that are going to count against you. So you want to take things down, clean it up, reset your privacy settings, make sure that you have thought about this very carefully. And Twitter, it's not really required. I have a Twitter account, but I'm in a field where that is appropriate. Business use of Twitter is different from personal use. Instead of people tweeting about what they're having for lunch, people tweeting about, oh, I just went to a great lecture on this and this topic, or, oh, I just signed up for this seminar, or, oh, I just got this certification. Or, you know, you're tweeting about business topics, not about personal things. So that use is a little different. You should, as Ken said, Google yourself. And just find out what a potential employer would see. They get your resume, or they find you on LinkedIn, they Google your name, what are they going to find? And there are strategies of what to do. You know, damage control. Say there's somebody else. There are like 5 Kim Lindsays in Akron. And I think one of them was having credit problems, and I was getting creditors calling me at one point. So there's things that you can't really control everything, but it's better to know what's out there. So you should definitely do that.